I promise.
So what?
Jonah wailed. He was beating on her back with his fists.
I don't care about X. I don't even miss him.
You do, said Zoe. And it's okay.
I don't. I swear to God, I don't,
shouted Jonah.
I miss Daddy.
He landed a kick to her right knee. Zoe's legs buckled and she collapsed into the snow. Jonah fled into the house. Rufus managed to slip in after him before he locked the door. Zoe leaned against the buggy and cried a long time, mortified by what she'd done. Val put an arm around her. She tried to console Zoe by describing every idiotic and embarrassing thing she had ever done, which took almost 15 minutes. None of it was as bad as traumatizing your little brother just as he reached out to you for help. None of it was as bad as allowing an obsession with a guy make you forget that your father was dead, that he'd been abandoned in a hole, and that you and just about everyone you loved were still wrestling with grief. Finally, Zoe went inside and called Jonah's name like a question. She didn't expect an answer and didn't get one. She peered up the steps to the bedrooms. Jonah had kicked a stack of laundry that their mother had folded before leaving for work. T-shirts, bras, and plaid little boy boxers were strewn over the staircase. Zoe hung her head and climbed. Rufus sat outside Jonah's door, trying everything he could think of to get the kid to open it. When he saw Zoe, he stood, hugged her, and, without saying I told you so, God bless him, lumbered down the stairs. Zoe sat and scratched at the door playfully. Jonah didn't answer. She could hear him jumping on the ladybug. I'm sorry, Jonah, she said. I'm a really bad example of a person right now. I know that. The bouncing stopped. The bed squeaked as Jonah hopped off it. Zoe heard him come to the door. Rather than open it, he sat on the other side and said nothing. It was a gesture, at least. I shouldn't have tried to trick you, she told him. She spoke gently. She could hear him breathing. And I should never have said your question wasn't important, she added. And I should never, ever have bought such an ugly car. Silence. There was a gap between the bottom of the door and the carpet. She slipped her fingers through it and wiggled them, a gesture of her own. She was about to pull her fingers back when she felt Jonah's hand grasp hers. Zoe didn't want to scare him off, so she kept quiet. Soon Jonah let go of her fingers, stood, and retreated farther into his room. A minute later, he slid a piece of paper, which he'd folded a ridiculous number of times, under the door. You're an excellent folder, said Zoe. Everyone says so. She opened the paper and smoothed it against the carpet. Even before she read the message, she smiled fondly at Jonah's handwriting, which was eccentric. His lowercase y's, for instance, were always uppercase. They stood up proudly wherever they happened to fall in the sentence, like gold medalists raising their fists. Zoe never teased Jonah about it. She knew that his ADHD made it hard for him to write. The pen couldn't keep up with his brain, for one thing, and that he was ashamed that his classmates had pulled so far ahead of him. She read his message. Why didn't Daddy Man take you with him to that cave? He always took you. Zoe didn't know what to say. She bought herself some time by telling him, I don't have anything to write with, Bug. Jonah padded off and then back again. He rolled something under the door, a sleek black pen attached to a beaded silver chain. He must have yanked it off the desk at the bank. Zoe would let her mom have that conversation. She pressed the paper against the door. I don't know why he didn't take me. I have wondered about that many times. even more times than I've wondered why I bought such an ugly car. Maybe Dad was sad, or maybe he thought I couldn't handle the cave. They continued passing the paper under the door. Jonah stopped folding it, which seemed like a sign that he was opening up to her. Why was Daddy Man sad? Money stuff, maybe? Not because of you or me or Mom. He loved us. Loved, loved. There was no answer. Zoe couldn't tell if the conversation was over. There was a jittery, unresolved feeling, like a field of static in her chest. The paper finally came back. Jonah had folded it a zillion times again. The sight of it made Zoe's heart fold in on itself, too. Why did we leave him down there? I hate it, and worry he is cold. Zoe turned the paper over. The other side was blank, though creased a dozen times and starting to tear. She wrote another message. It was a promise to Jonah, and a promise to herself. She didn't pause to think about it. It just spilled out of her. "Bug," she wrote, "I will make the police go find Dad's body, or I will go in that cave and find it myself. I swear to God. I always wanted to prove I could. And if I can't get Dad out of there myself, I will at least make sure he isn't cold. I will bring him a blanket." She'd written the message in huge letters and even signed it, dated it, and drawn a small picture of herself as a superhero, wearing a cape and flexing her biceps. Jonah opened his door, looking happy and shy. Behind him, Zoe could see that he'd jumped so hard on the ladybug that the bed had drifted away from the wall. Downstairs, Zoe asked Rufus if he could babysit a couple more hours. She was so ashamed of how she'd behaved that she could barely make eye contact, and then went outside, where Val was doing a handstand in the snow. Val did not believe in being bored for even 1 second. After Val had tumbled back onto her feet and wiped her hands on her jeans, Zoe handed her the paper that she and Jonah had scribbled on. Val pored over it, turning it this way and that as necessary.
"Jonah is so awesome," said Val. "I mean it. I just want to squeeze him till he pops."
Zoe nodded and walked past her to the car. "I'm going to the police station," she said. "I'm going to tell them they have to get my dad's body. You want to come?"
"Is there going to be a big confrontation?" said Val.
"Probably," said Zoe.
"Then I absolutely want to come," said Val. They didn't talk in the car. They just took turns fiddling with the radio. Zoe was deep in a country music phase, and Val liked a station that played the same 4 pop hits over and over and over, like a psychology experiment. The landscape that had seemed so bright and hopeful on the drive home from school now drifted by the windows looking hopeless and dead. Zoe parked outside the police station and took one of those deep, cleansing breaths her mother was always talking about.
"What do you want me to do in there?" said Val.
"Can I play a character? Can I improv?"
"Just be my friend, and don't let me get arrested," said Zoe.
Val made a pouty face.
"What if I want to get arrested?" she said.
"We'll come back another time for that," said Zoe.
"With costumes and stuff. Cool?"
"Very."
She and Val high-fived. They pretended to do it ironically, but the truth was that they just liked high-fiving. The only time they had ever tried fist-bumping, neither of them wanted to make the stupid explosion sound. The station was bustling, but the one cop Zoe liked, Brian Vilkemerson, stood up behind his desk when he saw the girls enter. He must have seen the tension pouring off them, like a vapor trail.
"Is this about Stan Mangold?" he said, before Zoe and Val even reached his desk.
"Because..."
Stan Mangold. Zoe hadn't thought about that psycho in days, and hearing his name threw her off balance.
No, said Zoe. Stan's been taken care of. Fortunately, Brian didn't ask what she meant.
What could she have said?
You guys had your chance. Now my boyfriend's taking him to hell.
This is more important, Zoe said quickly. This is about my father.
She told Brian she didn't want to talk to Chief Baldino. She referred to him as the mean one, the one who looks pregnant. Brian pursed his lips to kill a smile.
Why don't you and your friend sit with me for a minute, he said.
He gestured to two green chairs by his desk. Zoe could hear Baldino back in his office, noisily unwrapping a sandwich and laughing on the phone about something that probably had nothing to do with police work. Brian reached out to shake Val's hand. Not everybody was that respectful to teenagers. Also, Brian didn't do the patronizing triple take that virtually all adults did when they met Val. First, they'd see the half-shaved hair with orange streaks and grimace as if they were passing a wreck on the highway. Next, they'd notice how hot Val was. Finally, their brow would furrow, and they'd wonder why on earth a girl that pretty would blah yada blah. It never bothered Val. She had the same opinion of people that Zoe had of trophies. That they were both ridiculous and awesome, and all you could do was collect the coolest ones. Zoe was grateful that Brian just stuck out his hand and said hello, and didn't treat her friend as if she were some object of interest. There was already a star next to his name in her head, so she added a second one, along with an exclamation point.
"Hey there, I'm Sergeant Volkermerson," he said.
"And I'm Val," she said. "I'm Zoe's attorney." Brian tilted his head at this, but let it go. Now that Zoe was sitting there, with a sympathetic audience leaning forward, she found she no longer wanted to scream or make threats. She just wanted to be heard, and to be taken seriously. She tried not to be too rattled by the noisy everyday life of the station, the radio squawking, the baby crying, the officers jabbing at their keyboards. The hardest thing to block out was the sound of Baldino on the phone, doing impressions he thought were funny. The sound of his voice repulsed her. "It's been months since my dad died," she said. She stopped for a second, surprised by how much emotion that one sentence kicked up in her. Val put an arm around her shoulder, which made her even sadder somehow. She shrugged it off. She told Brian that the thought of her dad's body lying in a cave was eating away at her family. She told him about Jonah locking himself in the house, about the notes he'd passed under the door. Brian looked pained. Zoe could tell he was trying not to look at the pictures of his daughter that stood like monuments all over his desk.
"Look," he said. "This is so, so complicated. And not just because that particular cave is so dangerous."
Zoe waited to hear why it was so, so complicated. But as Brian was searching for words, Chief Baldino ambled heavily out of his office, like a bear. Zoe's stomach did its tightening thing. She prayed that he wouldn't notice her. If he said one rude thing to her, she'd lose it. She watched Baldino out of the corner of her eye. He crumpled up his lunch bag, compacting it into a tight ball as if it were a feat of strength. Then, though Zoe could count at least four garbage cans in plain sight, he handed it to Officer Mares and said,
"Throw that away for me, would you, Stuart? Can of Coke Zero on my desk, too."
The chief yawned, stretched, and surveyed his kingdom. He noticed Zoe. He grimaced and moved toward her. It was clear he hadn't forgotten that nasty night at the house. It was clear that he loathed her as much as she loathed him. She just prayed he wouldn't say anything to set her off. Baldino came so close that all she could see was his gut. Crumbs from his shirt fell onto her lap.
"I thought I smelled a teenager," he said.
Zoe sprang out of her chair. She began talking too loud, her hands shaking all the while, as if they wanted to disconnect from her body. The whole station got quiet. Everyone stared. Just as Zoe finished shouting, and just before Baldino, whose face had swelled with anger like a balloon filling with water, began yelling, "You're a disrespectful brat, and your old man can stay in that hole for all I care." She heard a microwave ding preposterously in the silence. Somebody's burrito was ready. Val and Brian were standing now, too. When had they stood up? Everything was blurring. They each had a hand on one of Zoe's arms, and they were steering her toward the door. She didn't want to cooperate. She stiffened her body, like Jonah when he refused to get dressed. Finally, Val whispered, "I love you, but stop it, or you really are going to get arrested. I'm saying this as your lawyer." Baldino seemed to notice Val for the first time now. He did the least subtle triple take Zoe had ever seen. Val gave him a wide smile. God, she loved Val. She was a born blurter, too. And said, "I could show you how to get this look if you want." Baldino snorted.
"Get your little friend out of here," he told her.
Zoe let her body go slack. There were tourists at the door, openly gawking at her. Brian cut a path through them. "It's all good," he told Zoe gently. The door swung open. She felt cold air on her face. She heard car tires hissing on the wet street. Already she'd forgotten everything she had said to Chief Baldino. She knew she'd been loud, but had she been clear? Had she been heard? Had she told him what she'd promised Jonah? She turned back to the chief. Brian's head sagged. He just wanted this to be over. And it was. Almost. "If you guys don't go get my dad, I'm gonna go get him myself," she told Baldino. "And then you may have two bodies to fish out of that cave. Not just one." Val took Zoe's car keys and escorted her to the passenger side. Zoe was still in such a cloud that Val had to help her with her seatbelt. Brian leaned in through the window. "Let's all just breathe for a second," he said. He rested against the struggle buggy, hands stuffed in his pockets, head tilted up at the sky. Zoe waited for the tension of the last 10 minutes to dissipate, for the wind to sweep in and break it up and turn it into rain, or something. She regained her equilibrium slowly. Everything started to come back into focus. Brian patted the roof of the car twice in an, "Okay, let's do this," sort of way. He crouched down beside Zoe's window again. "First, the good news," he said. He waved a small bag of candy, sour gummy worms, it looked like, and offered it to the girls. "I confiscated these from my daughter this morning," he said. When they smiled, he added, "It was a routine stop and frisk." Zoe and Val each took a handful of worms. Brian winced when he saw how many they were about to ingest, and dropped them one after the other into their mouths. The girls squirmed as the bitterness corroded their tongues.
"This is horrible," said Val.
"Really horrible," said Zoe.
When they'd calmed down, Brian did another 1-2 pat on the roof of the car.
"Can we talk for a second?" he said.
"Yes," said Zoe.
"Absolutely," said Val. Brian cast his eyes back at the station to make sure no one on the force was milling around.
"I know the chief doesn't seem like the world's awesomest guy," he said. "And I'm not going to lie to you, Zoe. He is not the world's awesomest guy. Between us, his wife is leaving him and he's pretty torn up about it. Anyway, the point is..." He paused, frowning. "The point is, he's not saying no about your dad because he's some colossal jerk," he continued. "He wanted to recover the body, believe me.
There's some good cave rescue units out there. He was in touch with them. Brian paused again, looking tortured. But he was told to let it go, he said. Well, not told, really. I shouldn't put it that way. He was asked to let it go. Zoe and Val replied simultaneously. By who? It's not my place to say, said Brian. He dropped his head, like a dog that knew it had done something wrong. I'm sorry. Zoe needed an answer. She made Brian look at her. Her eyes, she knew, were teary and bloodshot. Good. Let him see the kind of pain she was in. By who? She said again. Brian groaned. He swept a hand through his hair, which settled back down into an even messier formation. I just know I'm going to regret telling you this, he said. He thumped the car a final time, by way of goodbye. Your mother. Zoe slipped down in the passenger seat, her mood darkening by the second. There was a bank of black clouds approaching. It looked like the underside of a massive spaceship. You should call your mom, Val said quietly. Yeah, said Zoe. But can we just sit here a second? Whatever you need, said Val. I'll sit here forever if you want. I'll sit here until they tow the car to the junkyard. I'll go in the trash compactor with you if I have to. Thank you, said Zoe. I mean, I'd prefer not to go in the trash compactor, said Val. Zoe laughed despite herself. You want to hear something weird? She said. Of course, said Val. Have we met? When the cops came to ask us about Stan, said Zoe. I made some comment about how they were idiots and how they'd never gotten my dad's body out of the cave. And my mom gave me this look like, nothing good will come from stirring all that up. Now I know why. Because she told them to leave him there. Because she was glad he was gone. Maybe there was another reason, said Val. Like? Said Zoe. Val twisted her mouth into a frown. I got nothing, she said. When Zoe was ready to call her mom, Val slipped out of the car to give her some privacy. She gave Zoe an encouraging shove as she left. Zoe watched Val disappear into a thrift store across the street, then finally called. Even the phone sounded jittery as it rang. It took her mother forever to answer. Zoe, what's up? Are you okay? I'm working. The first fat drops of rain had begun to detonate on the windshield. Zoe, are you there? What's wrong? Zoe hardened her voice so she wouldn't cry. What's wrong is that you told the cops not to go get Dad's body, she said. Which is so messed up. And you lied to me about it. There was a long pause. Zoe waited. She could hear the everyday sounds of the hot springs in the background, the ping of the door opening, the beep of the cash register, the scuffling of bath slippers on the concrete floor. Look, this is a long conversation, her mother said, and I can't have it right now. I've got people asking for their money back because they don't want to sit outside in the rain. Like I'm responsible for the rain. Zoe slid over to the driver's seat and switched on the windshield wipers so she could see out. The rain was already coming down hard, hitting the roof like nails. I don't care how long a conversation it is, she told her mother. I want to have it now. Across the street, Val was waving at her through the thrift store window. She was modeling a red suede blazer and asking Zoe's opinion. Zoe shrugged in a meh sort of way. The red clashed with the orange streaks in Val's hair. I told the police to leave him because I didn't want someone else to get themselves killed, said Zoe's mom. And that is the truth. Zoe considered this. You're full of crap, she said.
Zoe,
said her mother.
I'm sorry, but you are, said Zoe. That may be part of the truth, but it's definitely not all of it.
So tell me, her mother said.
Why'd I do it?
Because of all that stuff you told me about him and Stan, said Zoe.
Because Dad was never around.
Because he was a disappointment, or whatever you called him.
Because you hated him.
You're wrong, her mother said. I never, ever hated your father. I wouldn't have spent 20 years with someone I didn't love. If nothing else, I wouldn't want to set an example like that for you and Jonah. You're going to have to guess again.
I'm sick of guessing, said Zoe. I told you before X left that I want to know everything.
And I told you that you don't, her mother said. There was another silence, a stalemate.
Listen, said her mother. There's stuff I'm still sorting through. There's stuff I'm still forgiving your father for. I'm not ready to talk about all of it yet. And I don't think you're ready to hear it. I'm sorry.
Val appeared in the shop window again. She was holding an absolutely enormous plastic skunk.
How about this?
Zoe laughed silently, so her mom wouldn't hear her. A car cruised past, kicking slush up against the windows. Her mother was still waiting for her to say something. Zoe wasn't ready to forgive her. She just wasn't.
You know what? She said. I don't really care what you thought of Dad. Jonah and I loved him, even if he was lame sometimes. She paused. I warned the police, and now I'm gonna warn you. Dad taught me how to cave, and you know what that means? That means I know how to go get him.
Val trotted back to the car in the rain. She crossed in the middle of the street and, when a pissed-off trucker honked at her, responded with a quick curtsy. She slipped into the car and handed Zoe a bag. She'd bought her a trophy at the thrift store. It had a weird golden O at the top.
You won best donut, said Val.
Zoe broke out of her mood long enough to smile and accept the award graciously. There are so many people I want to thank, she said. Zoe set the trophy on the back seat and started up the struggle buggy. The engine coughed before catching, annoyed at being woken up. But soon they were out on the wide, rain-slicked highway to Kalispell. Zoe told Val they had to make one more stop. They had to see Dallas. When she began to explain, Val interrupted her.
You want to see him because he's a caver, she said. You want him to train you in case you have to go into Black Teardrop.
She paused.
Hello? This is me, Zoe. I'm the one you don't have to explain things to. The rain was gentler now. The clouds were pulling apart, and there was a small blue hatch in the sky. Zoe felt herself beginning to breathe again. She had a plan. And she'd won best donut. On the road in front of them, there was a massive pickup with dual back tires and a bumper sticker that read, Montana is full. I hear North Dakota is nice. 10 minutes later, Zoe pulled into the giant lot outside House of Huns, where Dallas had gotten his dream job on the grill. Val still wasn't a huge fan of Dallas. He'd never asked out the girl who was going to say yes, and Val was convinced he still had a thing for Zoe. She told Zoe she was going to hit Froyolo. I can't stand to watch Dallas drool over you, she said. Dallas and I are just friends, she said. He gets that.
Yeah, okay, whatever, said Val. I don't actually care if you hurt him because, bottom line, that dude is basic. I mean, he was named after a TV show.
He says he was named after the Dallas Cowboys, said Zoe.
Of course he does, said Val. I'd say that too if I was named after a TV show.
Zoe felt the greasy air settle onto her skin as she entered House of Huns. Dallas and three other cooks were grunting around the giant grill, which they referred to as the Ring of Doom. They were all comically hunky. They carried rubber-tipped spears and wore cone-shaped leather hats, which were ringed with fake fur. They had wide leather straps crisscrossing their chests and backs, but were otherwise shirtless. Because of the heat, they perspired constantly. Every so often, drops of their sweat hit the grill and sizzled. The grill itself was an imposing black circle with a hole in the middle for scraps. Customers handed over the frozen meats, veggies, and sauces they had selected from the salad bar. Placards suggested at least 5 ladles of sauce, and recommended various combinations, and then pushed their tray along the cafeteria rails that surrounded the grill as the cooks fried the stuff up and chanted nonsense that sounded Hunnish. There was a miniature gong positioned nearby that the patrons could strike with a mallet if they put something in the tip jar. Whenever the gong was struck, the cooks stopped whatever they were doing and flexed. To say that Dallas loved his job would be a tremendous understatement. He beamed when he saw Zoe, then remembered he was supposed to be a Hun.
"What want?"
he barked theatrically. "Can I talk to you?" said Zoe.
"No talk," said Dallas. "Eat."
Zoe gazed down at the grill. It was heaped with grayish chips of what purported to be pork and beef. A handful of frozen peas rolled around like marbles. "I'm not eating this stuff," she said. She saw, with a pang, that she had insulted him.
"No eat, no talk," he said.
"Seriously?" she said. At this, Dallas transformed back into Dallas for a second and said, almost pleadingly,
"Come on, Zoe, work with me."
Another cook, was he Head Hun, stomped over to where they were standing and pounded a fist against his pecs, which were glistening with sweat and body lotion.
"Girl no eat?"
he said to Dallas. Zoe rolled her eyes.
"Okay, okay," she said.
"Girl eat. Girl eat."
Later, when Dallas was on break, he sat across from Zoe as she twirled noodles around a fork. He'd taken off his Hun hat and pulled on a white V-neck T-shirt, torn slightly at the base of the V. He was fanning himself with a laminated menu.
"What's up?" he said cheerily. "I haven't seen you in here since you dumped my ass."
Zoe smiled. "Yeah, sorry about that," she said.
"You kind of broke my feelings, dog," he said.
"I know," said Zoe. "I didn't realize..."
"You didn't realize what?"
said Dallas.
"That I had feelings?"
"Kind of," said Zoe. Dallas surprised her by laughing, and she saw a flash of the cute, unpretentious guy she used to make out with in the handicapped bathroom at Target.
"Totally honestly," he said. "I didn't really know I had feelings either.
But it's all cool. No worries.
I mean, I'm about to ask somebody out anyway."
"The girl who's gonna say yes?" said Zoe.
"She is gonna say yes," said Dallas.
"I know she is," said Zoe. "I'm seeing somebody else, too." Dallas's face fell.
"Ugh," he said. "Why'd you have to tell me that?"
"You just said you were asking someone out," said Zoe.
"But still,"
said Dallas. Zoe ate a sickly-looking chip of pork as a goodwill gesture. Dallas pretended not to care, but she could see a flicker of pride in his eyes.
"It's better than you thought, right?" he said.
Zoe nodded. "It's really not," she said. Behind her, another cook began beating the gong in a slow, steady rhythm to signal that Dallas's break was over. When Dallas didn't immediately stand, the cooks added an unintelligible chant on top of the beat. Dallas looked over Zoe's shoulder at the half-naked savages who were his co-workers.
"I should go soon," he said, "before my bros get rowdy."
"I can do this quick," said Zoe. "I want to go caving again, and I want you to go with me. I don't know how to do it in the snow, and you're the only caver I know who's as good as my dad was." Dallas shook his head.
"No way," he said.
Zoe's heart fell, until he continued.
"Your dad was way better than me," he said.
"Here's the messed up part," said Zoe. "I told Jonah I'd go into Black Teardrop if the cops wouldn't. Actually, this is crazy, but whatever. I told him I'd bring my dad a blanket." Dallas took this in. The cooks were chanting louder now. Dallas looked up and shouted something that sounded like,
"Ferg!"
"Why would your dad need a blanket?"
he asked Zoe.
"He's dead."
"Jonah thinks he's cold," she said.
"Wow,"
said Dallas. Zoe waited. "Will you help me?" she said.
"This is pretty batshit crazy, Zoe," said Dallas. "And really gruesome."
"You know what would be more gruesome?" she said. "If I didn't give a shit what happened to my father's body." Dallas's face took on a meditative expression.
"True dat," he said.
"And look, maybe the cops will deal with it," Zoe said. "And I won't have to."
"But you're not just bluffing, are you?"
said Dallas. "No," she said.
"That cave's a beast," said Dallas. "Obviously."
"Yeah," said Zoe.
"Black Teardrop's only a couple hundred yards from Silver Teardrop, which is less of a ball buster," he said. "We could do a training run there and see how you do."
He paused.
"This new boyfriend you like more than me, is he a caver?" he said. The question surprised Zoe.
"Sort of," she said. "But I'm asking you. Will you help me?"
"Well, I'm not going to let you go alone," said Dallas. "But we're going to have to do it fast, because when the snow starts to melt, those caves are going to be like water slides. Also, if we spend too long training, you're going to get all attracted to me, and then that's going to be a whole big thing."
She laughed.
"True dat," she said.
Dallas stood and slipped back into character, like a method actor about to hit the stage. He put on his Hun hat. Then, with a loud cry, he ripped off his V-neck t-shirt with both hands. The tear at the base of the V made it easy to shred, and, Zoe suspected, had been put there for that very purpose. An older woman sitting nearby hooted happily at the sight of Dallas's biceps. He tossed the shirt to her, then leaned down to Zoe and whispered proudly,
"They give us the t-shirts for free."
Zoe sat alone a while, pushing around noodles. She was nervous about the plan. She'd be an idiot not to be. But she was doing it for Jonah, and she wasn't going to let him down. There was a commotion on the other side of the restaurant. Zoe looked up and saw that Val, having finished her frozen yogurt, was outside the window. She was bored and doing jumping jacks to get her attention. A strange thought struck Zoe as she headed for the door. She was going into the earth for her dad, while X was trying to get out of it for her. 13. Zoe and Dallas planned the Silver Teardrop trip like it was a military operation. In the gleaming, high-ceilinged halls at school, they passed each other notes about rebelays, cow's tails, and carabiners, and about whether they should use 11-millimeter rope, which was the safest, or 9-millimeter, which was lighter to carry. Dallas was the treasurer of a caving club with the unfortunate name of the Grotto of Guys. His enthusiasm reminded Zoe so much of her father that sometimes, when Dallas was waving his hands around and babbling excitedly about the trip, she felt her eyes prick with tears. It was a Friday night now, close to midnight. They were going caving in the morning.
Zoe lay on the couch in the living room, a list of supplies and a map of Silver Teardrop in her hands. Her body felt jangly. She couldn't get her mind to sit still. The moon, bright and big, was blaring through the window next to her. A larch scratched at the window with its skeletal hands. Silver Teardrop was just a practice run. It was less daunting than Black Teardrop, where her father had died. But still, she had never gone caving in winter. She'd never dealt with snow and ice. She'd never gone without her dad at all. Her father had treated caves like they were holy ground. Zoe thought some of the graffiti on the walls of the caves was cool, especially the ancient-looking stuff. But it used to make her dad mental. He'd shined his headlamp at a wall where somebody had carved Phineas in the rock, and he'd shake his head. Even in the 1800s, some people were assholes. Her dad had shown her caves with amazing domed ceilings, caves with lakes so blue they seemed phosphorescent, caves with enormous, glassy stalagmites that looked like a pipe organ. "Here's the deal, Zoe," he'd tell her. "There are still a million unexplored places on Earth. Places where no human being has ever set foot. How cool is that? How freaking cool is that? It's just that they're all underground." Zoe's father had always been a few feet in front of her, testing the tunnels and drops and underground rivers. He'd always been right there, smiling goofily and shouting over his shoulder, "You're freaking awesome! You can do this! You're my girl!" But not anymore. Not ever again. She took her phone from the coffee table and texted Dallas to psych herself up. "Tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow," she wrote. Dallas texted back instantaneously, as if he'd just been waiting to hit send. "Pumped," he wrote. "Just gotta get out of work. Huns are being huge a-holes. Stand by." "WTFF," Zoe texted back. "Don't you dare blow me off." "Never. I'm pumped. G to G. I'm shaving. Not my face."
"Ew. Tell the Huns if they don't let you go, I will kick them in the and shove a spear up their ferg."
"Ha! Too much?"
"Hells no. L-M-N-O.
N?
Nuts, Zoe. Nuts."
She set her phone on the coffee table and stared at the map of the cave. In the top right corner, there was an inscription. "Silver Teardrop. Bottomed March 2nd, 2005. Team leaders, Bodenhamer and Belensky. Water temp, 32 degrees to 33 degrees. The map, which had been drawn by hand, looked like an illustration of a digestive tract, like they used to give out in 9th grade bio. The entrance to the cave, the mouth, was a narrow crawlway. It was going to be claustrophobic, and they'd have to be roped and harnessed as they crawled, because after 50 feet the passage arrived at a steep 175-foot drop, the esophagus. Water ran down one of the walls year-round. How much water there would be, a trickle or a waterfall, was the only question mark that nagged at Zoe and Dallas. They hoped the snow outside the cave hadn't started to melt and flood underground. Zoe's eyes drifted down the map. At the bottom of the drop, there was a big, bell-shaped chamber, the stomach, where the waterfall splashed against a giant rock and spilled onto the floor. She and Dallas would be touching down in a freezing lake. They'd have to wear wetsuits under their clothes. The chamber was what the cavers came for. It must have some spectacular ice formations hanging from the ceiling. It was called the chandelier room. Zoe let the map drop to the floor and rubbed her eyes. She could hear her mother upstairs, pacing around. They hadn't spoken in days. Zoe still felt angry and hurt, but she missed her mom. She felt disconnected from the world, like she was floating in space without a tether. The fact that X was gone made it worse. Zoe listened as the ceiling creaked under her mother's step. Every sound made her feel lonelier. Zoe was going caving because Jonah needed her to. Why couldn't her mom understand that? Did she think she was only doing it to cause trouble? Or because she needed a distraction while she waited for X? Jonah was still in too much pain to step outside the house. He was waiting for Zoe or the police to make it to the bottom of Black Teardrop. He'd become pale and weepy. He gnawed endlessly at his fingers. Every weekday morning, Rufus rumbled up in the truck with the waving bear, but even he, with his vast repertoire of silliness, couldn't cheer the kid up. When Rufus and Jonah played hide-and-seek, Jonah hid in the old freezer in the basement like he used to with their dad. But even that seemed to upset him. Rufus refused to take any money for caring for him. At first, Zoe assumed this was all part of his 1 mile per hour courtship of her mother. Then, one afternoon, she saw Rufus holding her brother's hand and delicately clipping his tiny fingernails. And she realized that he actually just cared about Jonah. That was the day Zoe decided the guy was a saint. Tonight, before Jonah went to bed, Zoe had dictated some extra supplies she'd need and, in a rare burst of energy, he'd written it as best he could in a spiral notebook. Zoe went over the list one more time. H2O. Protein bars, 3. Hair ties for tying hair. Raisins. Flashlights, 2. Swiss Army knife. Batteries. Wool socks, really thick ones. Dishwashing gloves, weird. Knee pads for knees. Garbage bag for poncho, just in case. Everything was stuffed into packs now. Zoe let the paper float to the floor. There was nothing left to do but somehow make it to morning. She was still awake at 2 a.m. She forced herself off the couch. She went to the front hall closet, why hadn't she thought of it before, and took out X's blue overcoat. It shimmered even in the muted light of the hallway. The metal hangers made a tingling sound when they touched. Zoe pressed her face to the coat. It smelled of wood smoke, pine, and the faint tang of sweat. The memory of colliding with X on the lake, of feeling his body collapse beneath her, of breathing him in for the first time, flooded over her. She squeezed the coat hard, as if he were in it. Dallas was cute. He had a sweet, lopsided grin. But X? X was kind of astounding. Zoe rubbed one of the buttons on the coat. It was made of stone. It warmed in her hand. She carried the coat to the couch and huddled under it. X was 5 or 6 inches taller than Zoe, so the coat engulfed her, cascaded over her, made her feel certain and safe. She imagined X finally returning. She imagined him walking up the steps. He would be too nervous to look at her at first. She would say, "What would she say?" She would say, "You forgot your coat." At 3 a.m., she decided to write X a letter. Even though she had no way to deliver it, and he didn't know how to read. The pen with the beaded chain that Jonah had taken from the bank lay on the coffee table. She picked it up. She took the supply list off the floor, turned it over, and pressed it against her knee. She didn't care that X would never see the letter. She just wanted, just needed, to capture some of the thoughts flying in circles in her head. She wrote without pausing until she'd filled the page. At 3:15, she folded the letter and slipped it into a pocket of X's coat, as if it were some kind of supernatural mail slot. She fell asleep within seconds. The stolen pen was still in her hand. The coat flowed over her like warm water. At 8:58, Zoe woke to the sound of Dallas blasting his horn. He was 2 minutes early, and, since she had last been in his car, he'd apparently customized the horn to play the first 5 notes of the Simpsons theme song. Zoe stumbled to the kitchen window. She made a slashing motion across her throat. "Stop honking!" Spread the fingers on her right hand. "I need 5 minutes." And then repeated the slashing gesture. "Seriously, honk again and you die." She was exhausted. Her neck ached from sleeping on the couch. She was in no condition to go caving. Adrenaline was going to have to get her through the day. Upstairs, she pulled on her wetsuit and, over that, as many layers as she could handle without walking like a mummy. She did a quick check of her backpack and the duffel bag that held her gear. All good. On the way down the hall, she peeked into Jonah's room, hoping he'd be awake, so she could hug his toasty little body before she left. He was deeply asleep, though. Flushed pink and 20,000 leagues under the sea. Downstairs, her mother hovered like a ghost in the kitchen. She was at the counter, stirring tea. "I'm going," said Zoe. Her mother didn't answer. Didn't even turn. Zoe didn't want to leave like this. She could hear Dallas outside, blasting a Kendrick Lamar rap in his Forerunner. "I'll be careful," she said. She meant it as a kind of peace offering, but her mother wheeled around angrily. "If you wanted to be careful, if you wanted to respect my wishes, you wouldn't go at all," she said. "Mom, listen." "No, Zoe, I'm not listening. Just go, if you're going." Her mother refused to say another word. She picked up the orange box of tea and began reading the back, as if it were interesting. Zoe was a wreck when she got in the Forerunner. Dallas stumbled around for something to say. Zoe felt bad about it. Dallas was so pumped for the expedition. And here she was like some pathetic chick getting all messy with her feels. She was not this person. In a surprising flurry of thoughtfulness, Dallas had brought Zoe a cappuccino from Coffee Traders and switched the radio to a country station she liked. Fiddles and acoustic guitars filled the car. Zoe could tell Dallas hated it, but he didn't say a word. She put a star next to his name in her head. "The Huns let you come after all," she said finally. "That's cool."
"The Huns suck," said Dallas, relieved to be talking. "Don't get me going on how hard they suck."
He pulled up to a red light.
"Check this out," he said. "My boss, right? We're supposed to call him King Rugilla, which is stupid and hard to pronounce. His name's actually Sandy. Anyway, King R gives me a massive, nut-busting guilt trip about the sacred code of the Huns and how they didn't just abandon their brothers for some chick." He paused. "You are the chick, by the way."
"I got that," said Zoe.
"So I go on Wikipedia, right? I never actually read about the Huns before because I kind of wanted to create my own character. But check this out. The Huns had no code. That was the point. They just attacked stuff."
The light bloomed green. Dallas let a string of cars turn in front of him before pulling forward. He was a weirdly polite driver.
"Sorry to get all riled," he said. "King R just makes me insane."
"I don't want you to get in trouble because of me," said Zoe. "You're not going to get fired, are you?"
"No, I'm definitely not going to get fired," said Dallas. "Because I quit."
"Dallas," said Zoe. "Because of me?"
"Yeah, because of you," he said shyly. "Shut up."
She'd embarrassed him. Who knew Dallas could even get embarrassed?
"They'll be begging me to come back by Monday," he added. "All those hot moms don't come in for the food, which I bet isn't even all that authentically Hunnic. I'm not saying I'm the biggest stud they've got, that would be conceited.
but I'm definitely in the top three. King R's got, like, back hair.
Zoe laughed, grateful that Dallas was so deeply, defiantly. Dallas. They streamed past Columbia Falls and turned north toward Polebridge. Civilization quickly petered out. All cell and internet service evaporated, and the last of the stores and restaurants gave way to empty, rutted roads that curved through the woods. Signs saying private property and be bear aware were nailed to firs along the roadside. Every so often a log cabin sent up a fat plume of smoke. Otherwise, the world was empty. Zoe felt it in her stomach. The closer they got to Silver Teardrop, the more anxious she felt about going caving again. Dallas must have sensed it.
You nervous? He said.
Yeah, she said.
Seriously? Said Dallas. Because we're going to crush this cave. We're both total ballers. Repeat after me. Crush, crush, crush.
Crush, 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 said Zoe.
That was feeble, said Dallas. Nothing was ever crushed by anybody who said crush like that.
It's not just the cave, said Zoe. Dallas frowned.
Do you want to talk about your feelings? Or whatever?
Zoe just stared at him. She couldn't help it. It was the last thing that the Dallas she'd gone out with would ever have asked.
Have you been practicing how to talk to girls, dog? She said. Maybe, said Dallas. Maybe with my mom, who's a therapist. I'm saying maybe.
Well, it's sweet of you to ask, said Zoe. But I know you don't actually want to hear about my feelings. They came to a narrow curve in the road. Another car was approaching. Dallas slowed down and drove onto the shoulder so it could pass.
Here's the thing that girls don't understand, he said.
Oh my God, said Zoe.
Please tell me what girls don't understand, because I've always wondered.
Either Dallas didn't hear the sarcasm, or decided to ignore it.
What girls don't understand, he began earnestly, is that guys actually do want to hear about their feelings. They just don't want to hear about all of their feelings. They want to hear about some of them.
How much are we talking? Said Zoe. Do you want to hear, like, 30% of our feelings? Dallas mulled this over.
Maybe 50%? He said. Depending.
We just want there to be time left at the end to talk about something else. But with you guys, with you girls, everything is always connected to everything else. So you start talking about one feeling, and that leads to another feeling, which leads to another feeling. He looked at her with his dimpled, wide-open face. He was absolutely sincere.
You know, there's never any time left.
They were just outside Polebridge now. Dallas turned onto the road to town. Polebridge was a tiny Pony Express sort of place in the middle of nowhere. There were maybe a dozen buildings, a cafe, a general store, a cluster of cabins, a red outhouse with a crescent moon on the door. Except for the satellite dishes, it might have been 1912. There was a rail for tying up your horse. Dallas parked in front of the store, shut off the engine, and turned to Zoe, apparently still waiting for the lowdown on her feelings. What the heck, she thought. Okay, here are the highlights, she said. My mom's pissed at me for going caving. Jonah won't leave the house. He's like a crazy person in a play. I haven't seen X, my boyfriend. I haven't seen him in days. I'm sorry, I know you don't want to hear about him. What else? I miss my dad. I've never gone caving without him. I don't even know how to go caving without him. She made herself stop talking. So those are my feelings.
Which 50% do you want to hear more about?
To Dallas's credit, he said exactly the right thing.
You need some sugar.